Okay, thank you very much, Robert. We're going to move straight. I'll ask Brendan to take the podium now, and then we can take questions on both when Brendan is finished, if that's okay. So Brendan's going to talk to us about DC scheme governance, and as you'd be aware, the Pension Authority has recently issued the codes, and that's open for consultation, so it'd be interesting to get an insight into that, and as I said, any other issues, Brendan, you'd like to raise with us.
Thanks, Jim, and good afternoon, everybody. It's inevitable when you're late in a conference that you cover some of the same ground as other people covered. And certainly some of what I'd like to cover is going to echo the points that people made. But broadly speaking, my objective is to give you an update on the authority's work on DC pension reform, and to talk about DC governance, and in particular some of the initiatives we have underway at the moment, particularly the recently published draft DC Codes of Governance. If I could recap, back in August 2013, the Pensions Authority published a consultation paper on the future of DC pensions, and this set out our view of, well, it started by setting out our view that we didn't believe that many DC schemes were working as well as they should. And in particular, we had and continue to have concerns about the standard of member communications and therefore the standard of member understanding, the investment options put to members, and the default investment strategy offered to members, and also for many schemes, the cost that DC members were being asked to bear, being told to bear, I think is probably a fair comment. So that was the background to our publication. Our proposal set out in that paper was a system that would involve a significantly smaller number of DC schemes, trustees, obviously a much smaller number of trustees who had a higher level of qualification, a higher level of commitment than many trustees currently have, and also that the work of those trustees in that smaller number of schemes was more closely supervised on a day-to-day basis. We got a large number of useful responses. You'll remember we published them. These responses dealt with the big picture issues. Some of them dealt with specific detailed aspects of what we had set out. And I'd like once again to thank people for the amount of work they put into those responses. And they do make a difference. Our view of where we think the defined contribution system in Ireland should go is fundamentally unchanged. We still hold the view that there are too many schemes. We still believe that there are there is a need for trustees to work to a higher standard for many schemes. However, certainly our views have been informed by the consultation. I would suggest our views are more nuanced. We are very aware of the complexity of this reform agenda, and we are very, very aware of the dangers that lurk in transition. The transition to a new system must be a fundamental part of the design of any new system. So this work is going on. That's our reform agenda. The next element of that you will see is we are currently working on draft standards for trustees, and we hope to have a public consultation on that later this year. As Jerry referred to at the beginning of the morning, there's also work going on simplification. We have a project jointly between ourselves and the Revenue looking at the simplification of pensions and tax. And this is an issue, I suppose, it's even older than 30 or 40 years. Our objective is to rationalize it. It should ideally be easier to navigate. It should have less gratuitous complexity, The complexity in there, there's so much complexity in there at the moment, which serves no functional purpose. Complexity is sometimes justified if there is a purpose to it, but this is historical complexity. This is complexity that has emerged over time. We also, ourselves in the revenue, would like to see inconsistencies taken out. And again, this was referred to earlier this morning, but there is no particular reason for the difference in tax treatment of contributions benefits between the various pension vehicles. So that is an important project that's going on parallel to our other reform agenda. And then there's the Universal Retirement Savings Group, which this is being run by the Department of Social Protection. We and a number of other bodies are part of that working group. It is worth saying in passing that Gerry referred to the consultation that is going on at the moment. There will be a further, broader consultation later in the year when everybody will get the chance to make comments. And that's a fundamentally important part of the process, because ultimately we need pension consents. We need consensus about pensions. So taken together, all those parts, some of which the pension authority is leading, some of which we are participating in, this is a very, very big reform agenda. Three strands: reform, simplification, and universal retirement savings. And it is important to see them as interrelated. It is important to understand that they must be taken forward together. Although universal retirement savings is, I suppose, the one we are most aware of and is arguably the most important, the purpose of universal retirement savings is not as simple as let's get more people to make contributions and let's just put those contributions in the pension system. The pension system into which those contributions go must be improved. There was a number of references this morning to trust or lack of it in the pension system and in financial institutions. We cannot expect a universal retirement savings system to succeed as well as it ought to, or even to succeed at all, if firstly the complexity that people are being, pushed into is beyond what they can understand. And we certainly can't expect it to succeed if we are either forcing them or defaulting them into a system in which they have low levels of trust. And it's not just a question of getting them to trust the scheme. The trust must be justified. So that's why I think it's very important to emphasise that these three strands of reform are all part of the same ambition, the same requirement to improve our pension system. And it all takes a very long time. But not, again, I keep quoting him, not, as Gerry said, for lack of paper. Obviously, at the heart of all this reform, we need government decisions. But it is not in any way simple as that, as you well know. There are three elements to reform. There are the strategic decisions to be made. Obviously, those have to be appropriately informed strategic decisions. There is the detailed design implementation. It's relatively easy to make very high-level decisions about where pensions should go, but as we all know, unless the details are worked out, it is going to trip itself up. It is not going to work. And then there is the operational implementation, the transition from the current system to the new system that we want. So I share people's eagerness to see this happen, but I think from my own perspective, it's a mix of patience and impatience. Yes, I would like to see the strategic decisions taken as quickly as possible, but obviously they have to be informed strategic decisions, and we have to make sure we understand the decisions that we are asking the government to make. We then have to make sure that in implementing the system, we do it properly, we don't rush it, and if we look at how long the UK took and how many people were involved, it gives us just one picture of how challenging this could be. But that said, we have to recognise that the reason we want to reform is because we recognise that the current pension system is not doing as well as it ought to. It is missing too many people. It is Many of those who are involved don't understand it, they do not feel comfortable with it, and they are likely to get less out of it than they expect. And we mustn't lose sight of that objective, but equally, we have to make sure that what change we make actually improves the situation. Change is relatively easy. Improvement is what we're aiming for. So that's what we're faced with. To turn to our current activity, I just want to mention two initiatives we have underway. The model documents came directly out of our GC consultation back in 2013. We asked, did people think this would be a very good idea? And they came back and said, yes, this would be an extremely good idea. Could we please get on with it? So we have been rolling out model documents for both defined contribution and defined benefit over the last year, and we will have a couple more before the end of this year. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the IEPF as an organisation and the individuals concerned for their very important help in that. We recognise that model documents can be, well, they're useful to us insofar as if people use the model documents, we can be sure of their compliance. We recognise their usefulness to trustees and their administrators, because if they use our model documents, they can feel safe from hearing the heavy tread of the pensions authority. So it is an important practical step. Anybody who's involved in the model documents, anybody who's involved in disclosure at all for pensions realises that the pensions disclosure rules could very usefully be changed. By the end of this year, we will finish the model documents project and we will move on to a disclosure reform agenda. Much of the current rules were written many, many years ago, 15, 20 years ago in some cases. And there's been a lot of recognition in recent years about the importance of how information is structured, how information is delivered, how it's made available. And we need, therefore, not just to change the contents of this document or that document, we need to undertake a restructuring of how we provide information to members. And that is fundamental to pensions, and it is going to be extremely difficult. And you can be certain that we'll be looking for your help and your input into that process. But we do recognise its importance. And finally, I'd like to talk about our draft DC Codes of Governance. On the 30th of April, we published these drafts. The consultation period will run until the 16th of June. I'm not going to comment on the drafts themselves, but I just would just like to make a few comments to give you some context. The first thing to say about the draft codes is that they are voluntary codes. They are intended to be voluntary codes. We do not believe that mandatory codes of governance along these lines would be practical within the current DC system. So our objective is codes that are advisory to trustees. We expect them to be living documents over time as we learn and as situations change. We will update them, but they are designed to support the work of trustees. They supplement, they don't replace the existing guidance we have for pension trustees, particularly the Pension Authority's trustee handbook. Basically, the current guidance we have sets out trustees' obligations. These are intended to take that a bit further, to help trustees, to give trustees further guidance about how to set about meeting their obligations to the expectation of the Pensions Authority. An important point to make about the codes, and this struck me when I reread them just last night, obviously, I think every defined contribution scheme outsources at least some of its work, and most DC trustees actually outsource all of their compliance work. We have no interest in changing this practice. We're not trying to dictate either more outsourcing or less outsourcing, that's a matter for trustees. What we would like to see, however, is that where trustees do outsource, they outsource consciously, that they are aware of what their obligations are, and they are aware of whose response, who is agreed will meet those obligations, and they are aware of how well those obligations are being met. And I suppose to summarise it, I would like, again, to repeat myself, we want to see trustees knowing what's going on, knowing that they are compliant, rather than assuming their administrator has got all that covered, and documenting it. I would suggest that realistically, it would be useful if the administrators took the lead in this, of communicating with the trustees for whom they provide these services, what they are doing. But it is important for trustees to recognise that at the end of the day, it is their responsibility. Finally, about the consultation, I would like to say it is a real consultation. We would have no problem if the final document looked considerably different to the one that we have published. If people have suggestions for better ways of achieving these objectives, we would very much welcome hearing them. Do bear in mind, however, that our objective is good member outcomes. So we will obviously read and consider all submissions made to us, but we will read them in the light of, will this achieve for the members what we want to see achieved? So bear that in mind when you are making submissions. But I would ask you to make submissions, whether small or long. We'd value all input, and as I said, the deadline is the 16th of June. So thank you very much for the opportunity, Jim, to talk, and obviously I'd be happy to take questions.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so we have a few moments then for questions, either for Robert or Brendan. Good member outcomes clearly was a common theme between the two. We heard of a case study of change, of redesign, with a strong focus around governance, and then we've heard some of Brendan's agenda around stronger governance within it. The IAPF certainly will be engaged in the consultation process and will respond on your behalf to the DC committee, but perhaps now is also a moment to have some direct interaction. So, questions, comments, observations, exam questions. Colm, back on here. Colm is the chair of our DC committee, so if we start there. Thanks, David.
Hi, how are you? I suppose a general question about trustee responsibility into retirement. So there's been a lot of discussion around that, and that is a challenge that we will face as a trustee group. So just general thoughts on that from a governance point of view. In terms of responsibility for trustees, because up to now, certainly within our own trustee group, very much when the member retires, we're done.
I think we certainly recognise